Last year, Iowa's pheasant population hit an all-time low. This year, they seem to be making a comeback. Today, we'll talk about pheasants and Iowa's other game birds. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today to talk turkey and pheasant and quail and prairie chicken. This hour, we'll talk about Iowa's game birds, the ones we see quite a bit of, like turkeys and pheasants, and the ones we see very little of, like the prairie chicken and the ruffed grouse. Today, we'll talk about these birds, their different habitats, and why some are doing well while others are not. We also want to hear your observations. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with us today to talk turkey, right, Jim?
Absolutely.
We're also going to talk about Iowa's other game birds as well this hour. And Jim, I want to start the hour with pheasants because last year, we heard reports all over the state of Iowa that Iowa's pheasant population was at its lowest in history. What are we hearing this year?
Well, it's really not accurate to say in history because this is an introduced bird, introduced into Iowa from Asia. And
so at one point there were zero pheasants.
That's right,
here.
There were zero. But in modern history, let's say the last half century, that's certainly the case. Since the lowest since the 1940s and 50s, actually. You have to remember, it's difficult, I think, when we had such a mild winter last year. Remember what the previous two, even three winters like that were like before that. And we had very deep snows, snow cover from December into March, very wet, cold springs, especially in areas. The wetness and cold lasted well into April and May, and frequent rains. And that meant not only is overwinter survival poor, but then when they get to spring, let's say they do successfully nest, you have this cold, wet weather and cold, wet weather. These are all birds that are ground-dwelling, chicken-like birds. They're precocial. That means that they come out, they hatch just like baby chicks do, and within 24 hours they're running around. They have a little bit of down on them, but they're not well feathered or anything like that for several weeks, so that they have a difficult time staying warm. And basically, the population, the nesting attempts that were successful, even if they hatched, they probably didn't survive very well at all because of this cold, wet spring. So you get 2-3 years in a row like that, and boy, that is just devastating on pheasant populations. You combine that then with the loss of habitat over the last several years, and that's just a recipe for disaster, in bird populations like this. These are, pheasants in particular, are grassland birds. They will certainly use woodland edges, shrubby habitat, that sort of thing. But these are grassland nesting birds. Our primary grassland in Iowa has been Conservation Reserve Program land, plus some existing small prairies and roadsides and that sort of thing that we have in the state. But basically, since the 1999, we've lost nearly 1.7 million acres of CRP land in the state of Iowa. That's incredible when you think about that. And so the nesting habitat and overwintering habitat is much less than it was even 10 years ago.
So that has put a lot of pressure on the pheasant population, but it sounds like you're saying last winter, which was, as we all remember, incredibly mild,
right,
with nice warm temperatures through most of the spring, that may have brought the population back a little bit in spite of the habitat loss that continues.
Yes, yeah. And had we not lost that habitat, I would guess that we would have seen much more like a 25 to 30 or 40% increase in pheasant numbers. As it was, we've had about, they think, based on the August surveys, what happens is for many, many years now, volunteers and DNR personnel have, and some county conservation board folks, drive a regular route, a 30-mile route, every year at a certain time of the year when there's heavy dew. This is usually in early August. And with heavy dew, the birds then in the morning, after roosting in grassland, will come out onto the roadsides. And so you drive this route and you count the number of birds you see very early in the morning before anybody else is out. That's an index, sort of a population index. If you do it year after year after year, which they have, you can get an index to what the population is like in the area. And so they've done that, and they're up about 16% this year from what they were. Now, I'm not sure that a lot of pheasant hunters in the fall will notice a lot of difference, certainly it's not lower than it was last year. It's certainly up somewhat.
Well, I saw some speculation, too, that the numbers might have been underreported this year because we didn't really have any heavy dews.
Yeah, it that can happen from year to year. Over time, that sort of evens out. And most years, you end up with pretty spotty populations. Some areas, it seems like they're really, really good. In other areas, it's no better than it was, a few years ago. That could be due to all kinds of things. Again, we're dealing with not an exact count. We're dealing with an index to bird numbers. And so it's an average over the state when you put all this information together. And it's been, reasonably accurate in terms of if you compare that then to harvest numbers, the tracking has been the same from year to year as the August estimates. So, yeah, certainly the dews, depending on where you were and, what it was like those couple of weeks, then, your numbers could be up or down from there, you bet.
Often when we talk about animals that are under habitat pressure in Iowa, we talk about the fact that they lack corridors, that, many of the creatures in Iowa, there may be their habitat in one place, but then it's disconnected from any other habitat that is right. Friendly to them. With game birds, does that make as much of a difference?
Not as much, because they can fly, and they do fly. Pheasants, quail, partridge, they all fly pretty well and can fly great distances. The fragmentation of the habitat is not as critical to them as it is to others. The corridor concept is much more important for small mammals and things that don't fly readily. On the other hand, when you're dealing with fragmentation, the size of the fragments tends to matter just a heck of a lot. The larger the fragment, so the more interior space there is, the better the chances of a bird like a pheasant or a quail successfully nesting than pulling off a nest. The reason is that the more edge you have, the edge is the space between two habitats. In this case, it might be the space between a cornfield and the middle of a grassland, that edge where there's two types of land meet. The more edge you have, the greater the number and the greater the success of the small predators that you have as well. So you add to that not only loss of habitat, but a greater amount of edge, a more fragmentation, greater numbers of predators as well. So this, you know, you add to that recipe, and boy, you can see why the numbers are so few right now.
Certainly. Well, there has been one of the things that some farmers have been trying in their fields are these contour strips where they'll mm-hmm. put in a strip of prairie in the field. And this is, of course, to prevent soil erosion and runoff and that kind of thing. That seems to also have been a popular area for game birds as well.
Yeah, it can be, certainly. And it all depends on a number of things. One, how that strip is managed. Is it mowed, for example? If it's mowed, it's absolutely no good to the birds. If it is left alone to kind of get weedy looking and tall and everything, then it's much better for the birds. We have to sort of drop our sort of, I would call it sort of Northern European idea of neatness. And if we were to do that, the birds might do much, much better in this fragmented landscape, in this very agricultural landscape. They would do much, much better. And the width of those strips also matters. Again, the narrower they are, the less interior space they have, the more likely it is that predators will find them. And when I'm talking predators, I'm talking especially skunks, foxes, raccoons, possums to some extent. Those four sort of medium-sized predators can be in fragmented habitat in very narrow strips, can be really devastating on any ground nesting birds, be they game birds or songbirds.
So, and that's a particular danger then, of course, in the springtime.
Right.
When the little ones are little.
Right, that's right. And when the grass isn't as tall, you know, again, if we look at how a landscape is managed, you can tell very quickly whether the landowner has, a knowledge of what those birds need over winter and into the spring, or whether they either don't care or don't know. And there's probably some of both of that out there.
Well, in my my very small observation, I live on 2 acres that we're gradually trying to return to native grasses. And I saw one pheasant in my yard this year. So
that's not bad for 2 acres.
Very small sample size. But
right.
We want to hear your observations as well this hour about how you have seen changing populations of the birds we're talking about where you are. So you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, next we're going to talk about quail, and they're even more rare.
Yeah, they're certainly, their populations are actually up this year from previous years, but boy, they are really, really very, very uncommon. And a lot of that is due to the fact that the same factors that affect, we just talked about affecting the pheasant, the loss of grassland habitat, high numbers of predators in particular, but also the lack of this shrubby, messy habitat that quail really like.
All right, we'll continue our conversation in a moment. My guest is wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He's an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant in the Ames area. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support comes from the Iowa Energy Center, providing grants for energy efficiency and renewable energy-related research, education, and demonstration projects in Iowa. On the web at energy.iastate.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about the game birds of Iowa this hour, and my guest is wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We've been talking about pheasants, which have a population low, or at least did last year, but seem to be on a bit of an incline, although with habitat pressure, that may not last. We're going to talk now about quail, and we just talked briefly about the fact that we see even less of quail in the state.
Yeah, their population numbers, again, according to the August surveys, are up about 60% or so from what they were last year. But you're dealing with numbers that were so micro numbers compared to what they used to be in the 60s and 70s and even the 1980s, that a 60% increase doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of folks who go out to either listen to them in the spring with their wonderful Bob White call, or in seeing them in the fall with your hunting dog. It's very, very difficult. One of the things that quail, as I mentioned right before the break there, is they really like this sort of messy habitat, you know, the shrubs, the weeds. And we have to look at these plants from the bird's perspective. And when we say weed, we think, it's going to get into my garden or my crops and a really bad thing. But for them, it is. It means seeds. It means food. It means cover. All those things are really, really important to them. Things that we consider weeds often have 20 to 50% protein, depending on the species we're talking about. Even ragweed has very high protein, a usable protein for birds to eat those seeds. So, you know, we look at these plants and the landscape, and we say, "Gee, that's an ugly weed." Well, not if you're a bird. You can get lots of good things out of it. Also, I mentioned messiness, and when we look at how our landscape has changed, and those folks who've lived in Iowa all their lives and are adults now could tell us easily, I think, how their landscape around their area has changed pretty dramatically. Much larger fields than there used to be, very few small woodlots, especially after this spring when corn prices have been and still are over $8, and bean prices are way up there. You know, people were destroying woodlots and every little piece of old farmstead and everything at a record pace to put it into, you know, a few more rows of corn or beans. And those are precisely the kinds of areas. Those little corner woodlots, those wide fence rows that were weedy and shrubby, all that stuff has pretty much disappeared from our landscape. When we had lots of livestock on our farms, we had a much more mixed agriculture, so we would plant lots more alfalfa fields, lots more oats. We had lots more fence rows because of different lands, different needs of different livestock on the farm. And that has pretty much gone by the wayside over much of the state. And as a result, quail numbers, as well as a lot of other ground nesting birds, be they game birds or non-game birds, as well as small mammals, have gone down.
And we pointed out a little while ago that pheasants are not native to the state of Iowa. They were introduced as a game bird to the state of Iowa. How about quail? They are native.
Yeah,
right?
They're a native bird. Bobwhite quail are. There are lots of species of quail. If you go to the Southwest, you'll see scaled quail and gamble's quail and all kinds of neat little quail. Bobwhite quail are the ones that are native here, and their range extended sometimes up into southern Wisconsin, but pretty much they're called northern bobwhites, but they really extend clear into the southern part of the U.S.
And today, my colleague Dean Borg brought to my attention that there is a hatchery in Maquoketa for game birds, for quail specifically, Sand Prairie Quail Farm, that's going out of business. It's been serving the game bird industry for 40 years. Does losing a resource like that also further impact the population? Because, of course, we have artificially raised these populations because people like to hunt these animals.
Well, most of those birds, though, are not used so much for stocking, because it turns out that stocking doesn't work very well. The pen-raised birds released into the wild may survive into the hunting season, But they don't do overwinter survival very well, so they really don't contribute to the population very much. Most of those birds were used for hunting dog trials or were raised for the table. Basically, they were just like chickens. They were raised and done for the table. Hunting dog trials, training dogs, that sort of thing was the vast majority of those birds were used for that. While some may have been released on farms in the hopes that it would reestablish quail populations, the needs of those birds are, because they're raised in a pen, are much simpler. And they don't do well in a landscape with lots of predators and having to find your own food on a daily basis. So all the research shows that releasing of pen-raised birds just doesn't work for very well.
We've been talking about the habitat that these birds like a lot. And, of course, they're at the same time that we're losing a lot of these grasslands in Iowa, there are other individuals who are trying to recreate these native grasslands on their own land.
Right.
And a lot more people have been planting prairie. That also means that they're managing the prairie and often burning it once a year. Of course, the burning that used to occur was sort of serendipity as to when
right.
it happened. Now a lot of people burn in the springtime. Is that a danger to these nesting birds?
Well, it certainly eliminates habitat. It's why when you burn, you ought to put together a plan that looks beyond a single year. In terms of wildlife, and we're not just talking game birds, we're talking songbirds, we're talking small mammals, we're talking turtles, snakes, all kinds of critters that use that habitat. If you have the only tall grass prairie remnant around the area and you have those critters using it and you burn it all at once, you are taking away all of their available habitat. So most people are now today thinking more and more about how they burn and how often they burn. For example, if you have 20 acres of prairie, you might burn a quarter or a third of that or even 20% of that each year and let the rest of it go. So then you sort of checkerboard the property with this is burned this year, this is burned next year, this is burned 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. So a lot of interesting research that shows that insect populations after a burn don't really recover back to their pre-burn levels for at least 4 or 5 years. That tells us something. That tells us that maybe we shouldn't burn more than every 4 or 5 years. Certainly in establishment years of a prairie, you might think about that burning more often. But after it's established, I don't think it needs a burn more than once every 4 or 5 years, probably at the most.
Let's move on to turkey here in a moment, but I also want to get to the phones as well. And you can join our conversation. We'd love to hear your impressions, your observations of Iowa's game birds in the last few years, and your questions as well at 866-780-9100. Let's go to Scott on the line in Mason City. Hi, Scott.
Morning. A couple things. Early this spring when we were mushroom hunting, we saw a lot of pheasants.
Yeah.
Up in north central Iowa.
Sure.
And then during the harvest here, we shot one that was banded. Would that be just an escapee from a game farm, do you think, or does the DNR track the pheasant population that way?
It's probably an escapee. What was the band? Did the band have on it U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or Iowa DNR on it, or was it just a colored band?
It appeared to me to either be brass or copper, and it just had a series of numbers, but there was a phone number which I dialed, and it comes back disconnected.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, it probably, I don't know of any effort. There may be some specific research projects in certain areas that I'm not aware of. It's quite possible that they may have banded some. The DNR doesn't regularly do that. It could be part of a research product, or it could be, as you say, an escapee from a release from a game farm or somebody who is putting them out there on their own farm.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for your call. Ben is on the line next near Wellman. Hi, Ben. Ben, are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay, it's Ed. It's Ed from Wellman.
Oh, hello, Ed.
Anyway, first an observation. I moved down here 35 years ago, and as you were pointing out, the habitat makes a heck of a difference because we used to have quail down here and everything, and the game bird populations just plummeted. And mm-hmm. last year we had maybe one or two pheasants at most. My thing is I raise and train English Cocker Spaniels, so I
sure.
use and raise game birds, and I'm sorry here. Sand Prairie's going out of business, but anyway.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, my thing is, I use hen pheasants, which actually some of mine are out here breeding young this year, so mm-hmm. I've been successful. But chucker partridge and red lake partridge, if conditions were optimum, could like the French red lake partridge survive here? Because I know the chucker like a dry, arid conditions,
right.
and they do not like moisture.
But. Right. Yeah, that I would say chuckers not. Red-legged, possibly. I don't know enough about their specific needs to know whether they would do well. You have to remember what most of Iowa is used for, and that is row crop agriculture. And it's not like in the 50s and 60s or 70s when we had lots more hay ground and things like that. I think that any ground dwelling game bird like that will do best in habitat that is in permanent cover of some kind, grassland, a mix of grass and forbs, that sort of thing, or in the case of the red grouse, much more of a semi woody habitat, the heather that they do well in. So whether they would do well here, I don't know. I really don't know enough about their specific needs, but it's possible, certainly.
Does that make you nervous? We obviously have a lot of non-native species that have been
right.
introducing possibly more that could wind up in the wild. Does that make you nervous, Jim?
Well, yes and no. Certainly we have the most altered landscape in the nation already. And the very fact that, there are some who believe that the pheasant the pheasants compete with, for example, with reestablishment of greater prairie chickens in the state. I don't think that's the case. I think it's the lack of large grasslands that really keep prairie chicken numbers pretty low. If we had sufficient grassland, then I might consider that. But I've looked at those populations in areas where there are large grasslands, for example, out in South Dakota and the Pierre National Grasslands, or in North Dakota, and while they will sometimes occupy the same habitat, the pheasants stay pretty close to where the cropland is, much more so than the prairie chickens do. So I'm not sure that they compete for exactly the same resources. When those resources are limited, as they are in Iowa, then perhaps they do compete.
Ben, thanks a lot for your call. And let's talk about turkeys, because we've talked about now pheasants and quail, which we don't see as much of anymore. Turkeys,
right.
on the other hand, seem to be doing pretty darn well.
Yeah, they have done very, very well. They're a different kind of bird. First of all, they're bigger. The only way they became established, re-established, I should say, these were native to Iowa, disappeared from the Iowa. When I was growing up in southeastern Iowa in the 50s and 60s, I never saw turkeys. There weren't any around.
Well, in the 70s and 80s, I never saw turkeys.
Right, there
either.
You go.
They were gone for a long time.
They've been gone for, over half a century. And when they finally brought wild birds in, wild caught birds from another state, then they became established and did pretty well. These are wild turkeys are a much larger bird. We're talking a 15 to 25 pound bird. The big toms can, you know, exceed 25 pounds sometimes, and so you're talking a large bird, and those of us who have had them for Thanksgiving dinner, you know, wild birds or domestic ones, know this is a really large bird. My golly, how do they survive so well in the landscape? Well, they're woodland or woodland edge, much different than the grassland birds or the grassland edge birds that we think about in terms of pheasants and quail. And they're also, we found them to be, you know, the when they were originally introduced, they were said, I think the quote was that they were never going to again be common in the state of Iowa. Boy, did turkeys prove us wrong. they it turns out that their diets are more varied than we ever thought they were. We thought that they would be restricted only to areas that had 100 acres or more of very large old mature oaks, because we knew that acorns were important. But it's more than that. They eat all kinds of things, lots and lots of insects. All these birds, when they're young, have to have insects to get enough protein in their diet to grow up to be adult birds. But turkeys just are incredible. And they're not restricted at all to just woodland areas. I've seen them out in the middle of prairies where they're foraging for insects and seeds out there. I've seen them in very shrubby habitat. You know, they're much more variable in terms of their needs and satisfying those needs than other birds. They'll also they've adapted well to cropland, in that the waste grain, particularly on fields that are not fall plowed, and that's less and less common, fortunately, for many reasons, they will forage for food out on that field. And if you leave that standing stubble and waste plant material on the ground, there's a lot of grain there for birds to use, and turkeys are very good at using that.
I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He's an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant in the Ames area. We're talking about Iowa's game birds this hour, and you're welcome to join our conversation. The number to call is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support comes from the UI Pentacrest Museums. The Museum of Natural History and Old Capitol Museum feature exhibits and programming for all ages. Open 6 days a week, including Thursdays until 8. No admission required.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about Iowa's game birds. And before the break, we were talking about how well turkeys seem to be doing in the state of Iowa. They seem to have adjusted very well to our changing landscape. And do you think that we'll see the population continue to grow?
Well, I'm not sure that it's going to continue. It certainly has expanded. They basically occupy every available county in the state. Numbers vary from west to east. Certainly, where you have more woodlands along rivers, they do better, and you have higher populations. But whether we'll see an increase, further increase in terms of numbers, it's really hard to tell. They are less susceptible to the vagaries of weather, because they're a bigger bird, they're a tougher bird. The hens are extremely good mothers, and if they bring off a brood, they're less susceptible to, although they can die of exposure with heavy spring rains and that, and certainly if they nest along rivers and the rivers flood like they did in 2008, 2010, certainly you lose on the local level. Your population can go up or down depending on weather to some extent, but they're much less susceptible than little little quail or little pheasants are, and they're just a tougher bird. So I think they're certainly well established in the state. Any habitat, further habitat loss affects everything for sure, and particularly woodland habitat loss would likely affect localized populations of wild turkeys as well.
Last time we talked about turkeys, didn't you tell me that if they get disrupted on their nest, they're not all that likely to go back?
Yeah, it's interesting because pheasants and quail, if they lose a nest, if a snake comes in and eats their eggs, or a raccoon comes in and raids them at nighttime and the female escapes, they will often re-nest 70-80% of the time. If there's habitat sufficient, depending on how late in the season is, they'll certainly re-nest or attempt to re-nest. Turkeys, it's very, very low. It's more like 10 to 20% may attempt to re-nest if they are disturbed. It doesn't mean that a hiker walking through a woods and you see a hen, a turkey fly off the nest, it doesn't mean if you leave right away, she'll probably come back to that. But if they're severely disturbed by a fox coming in or a raccoon coming in, and they can't chase them away, their chances of re-nesting are much lower than they are in pheasants and quail.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting difference in behavior. You know, who knows why?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, and it almost it makes you wonder at their success.
Yeah, it does. Well, you know, they have high numbers of eggs, and there's even some evidence of dump nesting in some turkeys where a bunch of hens in one area will put their eggs not just in their nest but in other birds' nests as well, which is an interesting way of getting your genes out there, you know. So.
Well, and we did spend, I think, a whole hour talking about turkeys about a year ago. So
right.
If you want to find out more about turkeys and turkey behavior and listen to Jim make some turkey calls, then you can go back in our archives and listen to last year's show. Let's talk about another bird that has become extremely rare, the ruffed grouse.
Yeah, ruffed grouse are one of my all-time favorite birds, in part because I guess when I started hunting, they were the bird that I started to hunt when I was a student in the University of Wisconsin. They were a bird that was such a challenge, and they still are. And they are an incredible woodland bird of the Northwoods, the boreal forest, in fact. And people may have heard them, may not realize they're around. And they sound, let me see if I can get this mic to pick this up. They sound, you'll hear them in the springtime and a little bit in the fall, but especially in the springtime, you'll hear the males doing this. Can you hear that?
Yes.
Okay, and that was the wings. They actually get on a drumming log. It's called a drumming log, and it sounds like a drum. So instead of singing, they move their wings back and forth, and the wind against their fast flapping wings creates that drumming sound in the air, and that's a territorial signal. Just as song is in a cardinal, this drumming sound in ruffed grouse says to all the female ruffed grouse in the woods, "Hey, baby, here I am. I'm really something. Listen to my drum," and tells all the other males to stay away. So they're a neat bird, and they're so well camouflaged. I've seen lots of times, I've been lucky enough to find hens on the nest, and if females blend in, and they will often be at the base of an oak tree, and their tail goes right up the tree, so it all blends together from ground to tree and looks just like a part of the ground. And so they're extremely well camouflaged, a wonderful, wonderful native bird. They'll burst from cover with this you know, very quickly, and get your heart going really quickly.
And they seem to be, as you mentioned, more and more rare.
Well, and part of that has to do with the loss of woodland habitat, but they were never common over most of the state. They were mainly north, because I said they were a boreal forest bird. They were common one time in northeastern Iowa. You can still find them occasionally in Yellow River State Forest and some of those areas around that part of the state, Alamakee County, northeastern Iowa. But it is tough to find them. Their populations go up and down a lot. They are one of the birds of the boreal forest where their populations vary a lot from year to year, and they tend to cycle up and down. This has been going on for many, many decades, probably hundreds and hundreds of years. And because in the boreal forest, the food chains are much simpler. We have many more species that tend to cycle their populations, okay. Snowshoe hares and things like that. And rough grouse are similar to that. But they've really disappeared from, for the most part, from Iowa. You may find the occasional one in northeastern Iowa, but probably never will be common again there.
Adam is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Adam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, not a question, more of a comment or something I thought would help put into perspective the hunting grounds that we've kind of lost over the last years. I was reading the Iowa DNR upland game report they put together from this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they said since 1990, we've lost the equivalent of a nine-mile stretch of ground from Omaha to Davenport.
Exactly, yeah.
It just in what has been, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
PRP acres or plowed under or whatever.
Yeah, 1.7 million acres of grassland lost in that time period, and that's a great way to picture it. That strip of land from one side of the state to the other, 9 miles wide. It's amazing to think of that's gone back into, under the plow for the most part. It's been taken out of CRP, and because of high grain prices, a lot of landowners have chosen to put it back into that. It tells us something, I think, we have to think about as they're debating over whether to even have a farm bill in this lame duck Congress. What are taxpayers willing to pay for? Do we want to pay for conservation once on, help a landowner out, pay for conservation once? Or are we going to pay for it over and over and over? And I think many are saying, let's pay for it once. Others are saying, well, you got to take what you can get. So we may end up having to pay for that conservation, putting it back into grass again some years down the road when grain prices drop again. So it's a real dilemma, and you can see how difficult it is in Congress to make those kinds of decisions.
Well, thanks for helping us put that in perspective. That's a different way to think about it. And we want to talk about one more bird this hour, and this is a bird I hope to someday see in person, but I haven't yet, and that's the prairie chicken.
The prairie chicken. Yeah, this is a bird that was, when our Euro-American ancestors came here, this bird actually, and we began putting farming. Certainly, Native Americans that here had farms of different sorts, but as farming in the European way became more common, prairie chicken numbers in Iowa actually went up, and so while they were very common here, prairie chickens are a bird that is totally grassland-oriented. While pheasants will occasionally roost in trees and use woodland edges and that sort of thing, prairie chickens are very much a grassland bird. And they are a bird that has, like many in this group, has what we call lek, L-E-K, in the springtime. And you can, if you go to an area where there are prairie chicken leks, you can sneak in, or sometimes they have blinds where you can watch them display. These are areas, leks are areas where males will come and display, sort of compete with one another, and these are called booming grounds in the case of prairie chickens, because they do this little dance on the prairie, and this is usually in shorter grass areas or more open areas of the prairies, and inflate sacks on the sides of their necks. In prairie chickens, they show up bright yellow, and they do this is great sound, and it is a wonderful experience. They were very common in Iowa well into the late 1800s, and then they began to people realized how delicious they were, and they like many species in the late 1800s.
I was going to say they apparently people in Iowa thought everything was delicious.
That's true. Yeah, that's
they,
right.
They ate everything they could eat.
Yeah.
Apparently,
well, these in particular though got shipped back east.
Okay,
by the trainload, if you can imagine, shipped back east along with. Birds like passenger pigeons in barrels in brine got shipped back to restaurants in the East Coast because they were so delicious. And I think they're second only to ruffed grouse. I think ruffed grouse is absolutely the best eating bird around. And when I get a chance to hunt them in northern Minnesota or Wisconsin, I love hunting ruffed grouse. But also, I will go out into the pure national grasslands where they're still common, and we'll get a few birds out there to eat. And they are absolutely fabulous. Doesn't excuse our ancestors, though, for virtually wiping them out of Iowa. So we have, the DNR has tried to reestablish prairie chickens in Iowa with mixed results. And the area that seems to have the most lex in it, and you can actually join a whole bunch of folks in the springtime charity and go down and to Kellerton, Iowa, down in Ringgold County in south central Iowa. There are a few lex in Decatur and scattered lex in a few other counties in south central Iowa, but the major lecking area is near Kellerton. And this is in the one area where they've been able to put together between private lands and public ownership a very large area of grassland, and the birds are doing okay there. Again, they vary from year to year. But what they really lack is more grassland, large grassland, to expand into.
And so you mentioned earlier how we'd brought in wild-caught turkeys, and that has taken off. That same kind of approach has been taken to prairie chickens?
Yes, yeah. You go to states where they have good populations of them. They trap them with rocket nets or drift traps and get them in and then bring those into the state and release them in suitable habitat. And they've done, it depends. Sometimes the birds, they were released in some of the Lus Hills, hoping that they would reestablish there, and they ended up flying back to Nebraska. You know, it was frustrating, and that certainly happened several times. But the population down near Kellerton seems now to be well established, and it's a great bird to bring back in the landscape. They're so fun to watch and to hear. It's a neat opportunity, so take advantage of that.
Kay on Facebook asks a question that I think a lot of non-hunters have this time of year in Iowa, Jim. And she says, I came across two hunters actively hunting while I was out for a hike in a public DNR wildlife area.
Sure.
What is the proper conduct for hikers in this situation?
Yeah, in the fall of the year, certainly when hunting seasons are on, even if you're going to be a hiker, particularly in public areas that are open to hunting, you need to know when those seasons are. And to be smart about it, you can certainly go out during hunting season, but make sure you wear hunter range as well. It protects you, it protects the hunters, and it keeps everybody able to continue to use that. I probably wouldn't go out if you're not a hunter during shotgun deer season in areas where there are shotgun deer being shot because those slugs go pretty far. But certainly you can use those areas. Just make sure that you're protecting yourself and protecting the hunters by wearing hunter range hats and other clothing as well.
But even if you're not a hunter, it's good to know the calendar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You bet.
Well, Jim, since we're approaching the biggest turkey day of the year, you want to leave us with any parting comments about Iowa's game birds?
Well, I think game birds in Iowa, we have a mixed bag of successes and failures, and it shows how much that we impact the landscape. And all landowners out there, be you urban or rural, pay attention to the wild world around you and know that the management on your land matters to them, because we're not the only critters on the landscape. If you own large patches of grassland, try to think about that before putting it back under the plow, and imagine that there are lots of other things that like to use this landscape with us.
Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He's also an environmental, interpretive, and wildlife consultant in the Ames area, and he comes by once a month to talk about Iowa's wildlife with us. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, with technical support from Jason Burns in Ames. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Superman is Jewish? We'll find out in a new book by Harry Broad. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.